Hello and welcome back to the Classics World Chat Show. And today we're joined by former editor of Classics World magazine, Simon Goldsworthy.
Hello.
So, Simon, we know you best as former editor of our monthly magazine, Classics World, but what are you up to these days?
Editing a couple of magazines, club magazines. I do one for the MG Owners Club and another for the Triumph Sports Six Club, which is kind of going back to what I did for decades for Kelsey when I did MG Enthusiast and Triumph World magazines.
Oh, those two sort of resonate with you,
don't
right,
they? Yeah. They're always close to my heart, so I do those and the Standard Motor Club. I help with their magazine as well.
Brilliant. And you're tinkering around all sorts of classic projects as well, aren't you?
Yeah, most of them are left over from Classics World, to be honest. I've got five cars out between here and the workshop, and four of them are former Classic World project cars.
So there's your lovely midget from a few years back.
Yeah, that one's staying. That's not going anywhere.
Brilliant. We were filming today with your Morris Marina and Triumph Acclaim.
Yeah. And the Triumph Acclaim is a real favourite of mine.
Yeah, you love
one
those.
The kids are insured on, so that's staying as well. The Marina and then the Fiat 500, which is just coming to the end finally. Those two will probably have to go soon just because it's too many to keep on top of.
See, you can have too many.
Who thought it?
Especially if you buy a couple of mine.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Get the credit card out. I think you're similarly afflicted as we are, kind of just tinkering around old cars, which is actually a very good segue because we want to talk today about DIY-friendly classics. Mm. There are cars which, if you want to get into the classic car hobby, you want to do a bit of tinkering, you want to do it yourself. Some of us can't afford a full restoration at the hands of someone else. So we wanted to talk about cars that, if you want to get your hands dirty, if you want to work on a classic car yourself, these are the ones we recommend. And unofficially, we stuck within a 10 grand budget, but if you want to spend more, you can spend more. So, Simon, what would be your first choice then of a classic that you advise someone, if you want to tinker on it yourself, what would you advise?
Yeah, well, first has to be, given my background, has to be an MGB. Nice about that is it's totally usable on the road. You could use it as a modern car. If you get a GT, it's practical as well.
Mm, yep.
For me, the overriding reason for saying a car is DIY friendly and a good suggestion for beginners especially is parts supply.
Oh,
99% of your problem is going to be where can you get bits and what can you get. And with the MGB, you haven't really got any issues.
And actually, we know you've worked on projects where parts has been an issue because you bought some really left field project cars. So the MGB is the absolute antithesis of that. It's always been a ubiquitous choice. It enjoys fabulous club support and excellent parts availability.
Everything from a badge to a body shell, basically, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah. And genuinely, body shells, you can pick them up. They're not cheap, though. You don't want to underestimate the cost of a body shell.
Can be a false economy, yeah.
Up and up, and then you've got to do the fitting and the painting. And then when you get a new body shell all painted, you can't put manky old bits on it because it shows them up. So the cost will go up. And in something, well, in most applications that the B series was used, you've got good engine bay space around it as well.
Which is another factor, isn't it?
It is. And this is somewhere where the Mini will fall down. It's A series. There's millions and millions about. You can
packed
get all the bits.
There, yeah.
But you need someone spare with small hands to help fit anything.
Yeah. I think the B's a great choice. And like you say, it's the kind of car that if you're new to the world of classics, you can work on it, you can do it. But also, if you've never as I've said this before, if you've never driven an old car before, you get an MGB within 30 seconds, it feels comfortable.
Yeah.
It's all natural. There's nothing quirky.
It's not alien.
It. Mm. That's the main thing. Mr. Whedon, your first DIY classical choice.
Well, I've got to say, this subject is a slightly precarious subject matter for me, given that I'm not someone that typically gets my hands dirty with cars, for both reasons of time, competence, patience, space, tools. I mean, basically, there's a number of reasons why.
I think you've covered them all there.
Yeah, that's all of them.
Pretty much. But nonetheless, doing this job for a number of years, you get to know the cars that are better prospects for maintenance and restoration. So I'd started with probably a very obvious choice, and that's Morris Minor.
Great.
The ubiquitous nature of a Morris Minor, particularly those 1000 models onwards, where there's loads of them around, the parts availability and just the expertise really that's available. The club's always been very strong.
Even all the specialist stuff like the timber for the traveller.
Yeah.
And things like that.
And they're still relatively affordable, and then you can do loads to them. You can keep them standard. You can sort of upgrade them by putting slightly modern bits on it so it's a bit more drivable in modern conditions. A dependable, traditional, classic car.
They're rewarding, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's unfussed, uncomplicated. Keep on top of it. It's going to be a lovely thing to own. And you
ran a Minor as a project, didn't you?
I love them, yeah. And I think they're very much like the B, and this is even odder because introduced in the 40s, anyone could jump in that and drive it.
Yeah.
And it would feel a little unusual, it would feel a little odd, but there's nothing complicated about it.
A lot of it's just about adjusting your driving and your braking distances and all that kind of stuff.
But you learn things from that kind of stuff. You're double declutching and you're taking your time and everything else. And there's a real, real rewarding side to it, to working on the car.
Well, you can feel the gears meshing and everything you do has a reaction from the car.
Yeah.
So that you're involved in it. You're not just a passenger behind the wheel.
No, I think that's a great choice.
So come on, you're a tinkerer.
So spinning off of the fact that you ran one as a project car, my first choice, you also ran as a project car. So I think we covered it in a video. And that is the original Fiat Panda. Mm. Okay. About as simple as it comes. When that was revealed, the management asked, where's the interior? And that was it. Yeah. That's how simple they are. Nothing to a Fiat Panda. And the later ones run the Fire engine, F-I-R-E, which I've got the same engine in my Seicento, so I can tell you they're bulletproof. I can tell you they're reliable. I can tell you they're easy to work on. They are well supported these days in places like Recambio. I said, you said you got some parts for yours from.
Yeah.
And again, in a car that small, there's only so much that can go wrong. Yes, they rust. Of course they do. But the parts are out there now and you can restore them. And particularly the 4x4s, the values are getting good enough now that you can justify the restoration or you can justify doing
it
yourself.
It's
simple and it's charming, and I gather you had a lot of success with yours as well, didn't you?
Absolutely. We had it was a late model on a J plate, I think.
Yes. So
although it had the absolutely ancient 903cc Fiat engine, it had a 5-speed gearbox.
Yeah.
And as a combination, it was great to get up to Scotland and back, and it felt quite comfortable. One word of warning now on that. The Minor and the MGB, British cars, so that's where the well pull the parts
yes.
are. With the Fiat Panda, the one thing I found is because nearly all the survivors are left-hand drive in Italy and in Europe and so on, you couldn't get right-hand drive headlights for them.
Yes, specific parts. Yeah.
Something like that could really just, you weren't expecting it, I wasn't. I thought, oh, if I can't get new, I'll get second-hand. Couldn't get them anywhere. And then all of a sudden you think, well, that's an item you can't do without.
Yeah.
You can't stick a 7-inch round headlight in there. It's not going to work.
Not easy.
So things can catch you out.
Yeah.
And that's not only true of the Fiat. Obviously, any car can have its Achilles heel or one thing that's missing.
It's worth being involved in the community. And the Fiat community is
where you
bustling.
Get the info, isn't it?
Exactly.
Join the club before you buy the car.
Absolutely.
Is always good advice.
And yes, there aren't too many of them left now, but I think if you can find a good one, they're a simple but effective thing to work on. The good thing about them rotting so much is that there are enough cars that will have been consigned to scrap are a source of parts, which you can do. And if you're struggling to find a Panda, also the Seat Marbella, which is effectively the same car. Moving on from that, Simon, what was your second choice?
I've gone again based almost entirely on parts supply and the Volkswagen Beetle, air-cooled Beetle.
Ah, very good.
Brilliant. Again, choice of suppliers for every single part you could possibly want. Huge community, loads of advice and help. I think Beetles are great. It's not just the car. Obviously, something like the Beetle gets you entry to a whole lifestyle as well.
Absolutely. Does that. Yeah. Well, obviously, we do the Volkswagen show, which is coming up at time of recording. The following is extraordinary
and passionate.
It subdivides as well. That's the amazing thing. You've got these sort of really early era, the true Wolfsburg cars. You've got the sort of back to 89 display is a popular one, because apparently that's when the sort of modifying scene was at its peak for air-cooled Beetles.
Because you can do all those to them, can't you? There's enough people that if you want to do the modifying thing and the lowering of the camber and put a super engine in it, whatever you want to do, there's enough other people doing it that they can teach you how to do it. But equally, this is a car so simple, you can take the engine out in half an hour.
Yeah. And I think because so many people are doing the modifications, you don't get frowned upon for having ruined a good car, as you do get with some accusation you get with some cars and models.
And again, there are some great specialists out there.
Heritage Parts is a great one.
Like Heritage,
Beetle is a real Marmite car, I find. I've never met anyone who's indifferent about them.
No.
They're either they're strongly opinionated one way or the other, and I'm with you, I love them. Yeah. I think they're such a mechanically satisfying car to drive as well. There's a real ka-clunk, ka-clunk from the gear change, and nothing handles quite like a Beetle. No, I think they're fabulous. And like you say, you can fundamentally learn how each bit of a car works as you work on it.
When you look at a rear-engine car and you work on it, you'll find that access is probably better than it is on a front-engine car. Instead of leaning over the bonnet and doing your back in, leaning over the wings, trying to go down, you can just sit on the floor or on a stool, lift up the tailgate, and you're there working, and the engine comes out in an hour.
So I've gone with a probably similar to the Minor, really. I've gone with Triumph Herald, actually.
Oh, you're in the right company for Triumph Herald.
Well, exactly. I've always loved the Triumph Herald to look at anyway. I think they're just really pretty cars. Again, access to the engine bay is really good, and parts supply.
The clamshell,
really There's some... Again, fabulous club support. It's like I'm doing it as a promo for you.
This wasn't planned.
But But it is. It's good. It's a long-lived classic where there's great support, great knowledge. You can sympathetically upgrade them if you want to and put bigger engines in if you want to. We ran one for a while which had the 1500 engine in it, and it was a joy. Since then, I've always hankered to have one.
Yeah. From a DIY point of view as well, you can take the whole front end is a clamshell. The whole rear end you can take off as one basic whole section, and you're left with that really simple chassis.
There's a no end of kit cars that do use the Triumph chassis
because it's so simple and easy to work on.
I see it. There's the simplicity to the Herald, which I really like. As a concept, it works. It totally works. It's a desirable car. It's actually really nice to drive. Again, because there's good parts support and good club support, I know that if you ever sort of had an issue, you'd get it sorted pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Well, there's an elegance about a Herald.
Yeah.
Particularly from the back with those little fins and the badges, and especially the two-tone colour or the stripe on it.
Yeah.
It just all adds to it's a feel-good car.
Well, again, spiralling off of the basic British theme, which was sort of on here, Austin A30 is my next choice, or A35, take your pick.
Yep.
So after we did our shoot last year of Morris Minor versus A35...
You were smitten,
weren't I? I was smitten. I came home and was Googling them, and I spent hours and hours looking at them for sale, and what I discovered is how well supported they are. You can get everything for the A-series engine, and that's very well supported, we know that. You can buy all full rebuild kits for it in the gearbox. All the suspension components exist. There's so many rust repair panels exist. Not all of them. There will be some fabrication required, but they're well known enough that the bits you can't buy, someone will be able to make or to fabricate or to repair. And if you do want to upgrade it and go racing with it, you can supercharge it, you can put bigger carbs in it, you can do whatever you want. There is a massive following for those cars in their own right, maybe not as big as the Minor or the MGB, but they're fantastically well supported in the realms of classic Britishness, to the point where there's enough knowledge and enough parts and transferability, so bits from other cars work on it and so on.
Yep.
I think they're fabulous. Not to mention, as we said last year, from a DIY perspective, an A30 is narrower than a smart car. So you can get one of those in your garage, no problem.
Absolutely.
And that's important, because a domestic garage, you might be able to get the car in it,
but
you still want to be able to work around it.
Exactly.
You don't want to be pushing it outside in the rain every time
or having to wait
for the dry weather.
Yeah.
And a car, once you work on it, it grows very quickly. Massively.
I think it's brilliant. They are charming, and I still want one.
Yeah. There's a rarity factor to them as well.
Despite the numbers produced,
you don't see them around as often. So they do look like a little toy car.
That would be one that I would add to my fleet.
Mm-hmm. Very good choice.
So, Simon, third and final choice.
Yeah, third and final choice is the Mini. Another British car with absolutely fabulous parts supply. So I can't overstate how important those are
if you're
learning. Did mention earlier about space in a Mini.
Yes.
That can be tricky. There's something to be learned on every car.
Oh, yeah.
And
a bit like some of the other choices we've talked about today. There's also a long shelf life of these cars. They went for a very long time, which means that there's lots of different eras to choose from.
40 years worth of
them. But also lots of different sort of tastes about whether they modify them or upgrade them and do various sort of personalised bits.
But again, massive. Again, you're up there with MG levels of you can buy a body shell, everything, all the parts. If you want to do an injection conversion or supercharge it or whatever, you could take a Mini from any era you want and make it like a Mini of any other era you want, if the field takes you.
Yeah. We probably need Jeff on this podcast, but I'd like to ask if there's a particular era of Mini. Like, do you go really early Mark One, or is there sort of a peak period from a maintenance perspective that's worth doing? Do we go pre-injection?
Yeah. Another rule of thumb as well to always think of is, are you going to drive it afterwards, or are you going to polish it and show it?
Yeah, is it a show pony?
Yeah. If you're going to drive it, you don't want a 1950 car.
Very true. Yeah, that's true.
Get one from the 70s. Bit more power, a few more mod cons. When you talk about Minis and mod cons, they don't normally go in the same sense.
But equally, if you go for a 90s one, there are Japanese import ones around where you can even get air conditioning. So if you want the classic Mini, if you want the basic Mini feel.
If you want small hands to work on a Mini, get one with air conditioning. And you need a little Barbie doll.
Yeah, exactly. That's cute little cocktail stick thing.
Yeah. As a child of the 80s, I'd definitely go for a kind of special edition 80s one, a red hot or a jet black one, that kind of era.
With the furry dice hanging up.
Big sidewinder stripes.
That's right. Names and the sun strip across the window.
So cool.
You're settled then.
Love it. No, very cool. Mr. Whedon, your third and final choice, sir.
I've gone all British. I've gone a complete clean sweep.
Very patriotic.
Land Rover Series 3. You could pretty much just crawl underneath it because the ground clearance is so good. Yeah. You don't even need a trolley jack or axle stand. By then, you know, you've got pretty tried and tested mechanicals. Again, the availability of everything is still very strong. You can just work on them. They're pretty indestructible, really. And
there's a massive scene around them as well. Like you say, that counts for a lot, is the following behind them.
Yeah.
And with Land Rovers, whether you're trying to restore it or just repair it, or you want to modify it and put big knobblies on it and all the rest of it,
yeah,
there will be someone who's done it before who can tell you how to do it.
Yeah. And I think specifically by the time you get to Series 3, a bit like we were saying with the Mini, it's a little bit more usable in the real world. Probably a common theme across a lot of our choices is their long shelf life. They were in production for a long time, but also their simplicity. Yes. Their inherent simplicity is part of their charm.
Another thing I think that's coming across, occurring to me now with all our choices, none of them arouse jealousy.
No.
They all evoke nostalgia or smiles, or you're much more likely to get a thumbs up or to be allowed out at a junction.
That's a very good
point. Any of these cars.
Yes, there's a lovely kind of universal charm about them all, isn't there?
I think you're absolutely right. But that's the thing. Because of their simplicity, they're classless.
Yeah.
You could own a £10 million country estate, or you could be a student on a minimum wage tinkering away, and it doesn't really matter. The Land Rover is possibly the best example of that. My final choice, I'll be honest with you, your point about parts support counts for a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go for perhaps the newest car with the best parts support. Mazda MX-5. Well, you can't buy a new body shell for it,
a la
MG. You can buy pretty much everything else. Yes, they rot, but you can buy the sills and the arches and the wings and everything else. And companies like Mosh Europe have fantastic support for MX-5s, all the engine parts, all the mechanical parts. Yes, they're fuel injected, but it's about as simple a fuel injection as you can get. And those engines are bulletproof reliable anyway. Yeah. My dad, when he had a Mark 1, went there to buy some parts. The chap had a load of gearboxes. And my dad goes, how much are one of those? And the guy goes, just take them. They never break. Just have one.
Wow.
The fact that people of my kind of, or even younger than me, 18, 19, they're buying them as a first car or project car or whatever, and you can modify them if you want to the nth degree.
When you first looked at the parts catalogue, did you think everything was out of stock because it had NA?
NA, yes, very good. Very good. Wonderfully well supported. Mark 1s or Mark 2s, take your pick, because they're broadly the same bar the headlights. And yes, they are at the point now where they will need a bit of restoration, a new hood and some rust, but it's all doable.
The MX-5 is a really good choice, and actually, and what resonates with the MX-5 as it does with some of the others is that ability to personalise it without ruining it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can upgrade them, you can tweak them and make them more to your liking without completely trashing the concept. The MX-5 Owners Club, always got to give a shout out to those guys, because it's a really big, successful club that supported owners both in practical terms, but also giving them opportunity to go out and about and enjoy their car.
It's a new enough car that it's not intimidating. If you've never touched points or a carburetor before, you don't have to.
Top choice. Like I say, the most modern of the lot.
You've got manuals or automatics.
Yep.
You've got different engine sizes that will help with insurance if you're younger to drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's imported ones if you want some special bits and pieces. Yeah.
The point we were saying earlier about cars being easy to jump into and drive, you don't have to learn them.
Doesn't get
this
better.
This takes it to a new level. It makes all the ones that we talked about before, all right, maybe you've got to learn a little bit and adapt, because in an MX-5, it's just a totally modern car, isn't it?
But also, where it's a lot less common now, the vast majority of people now, in the last, let's say, 20 years, their first driving experience is probably front-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. Fiesta, Corsa, Polo, whatever. Yeah. Not rear-wheel drive. When you two were learning to drive, rear-wheel drive was a lot more common. These days, an MX-5 is probably going to be the first rear-wheel drive car that someone's driven. Mm-hmm. And there's enough power there to have fun with it, but there's not so much that you
can
get yourself into trouble.
It's a safe car.
Yeah, so safe and easy to drive, reliable, great parts support, and still relatively affordable, crucially. Particularly Mark 2s, they're still relatively cheap.
And they look cracking as well.
Yeah,
they still look good.
I got a sneaking feeling that I prefer the Mark 2 to the NA.
I do. I'm glad I'll shake your hand on that.
All right,
top man. Well, there you go. There's all our choices for DIY classics. Why don't you let us know down below, first of all, Mark 1 or Mark 2 MX-5, because it seems there's a debate going on there. But second of all, which one of us chose best? What cars would you pick as a DIY-friendly classic proposition? But in the meantime, don't forget to like this video, follow us on whichever podcast platform you're listening to, if you already are, and make sure to subscribe to the channel for 2 new videos every single week. We've done videos on pretty much, I think, every car we've mentioned here today.
Indeed.
And lots more besides. Thanks to Simon for joining us.
And pleasure. Thanks, Simon.
We'll see you again very soon.
Ta-da.